The Vishnu Dutas.
The Vishnu Dutas.
Immediately arrived when they heard the holy name of their master.
Immediately arrived when they heard the holy name of their master.
From the mouth of the dying Ajamil.
From the mouth of the dying Ajamil.
Who had certainly chanted without offense.
Who had certainly chanted without offense.
Because he had chanted in complete anxiety.
Because he had chanted in complete anxiety.
Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, Hari Kirtanam Nishamya Patan Kata Bhutasya Bhaturanam Bhuvata. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu came because Ajamil had chanted the holy name of Narayan. They did not consider why he was chanting. While chanting the name of Narayan, Ajamil was actually thinking of his son, but simply because they heard Ajamil chanting the Lord's name, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas immediately came for Ajamil's protection. Hari Kirtanam is actually meant to glorify the Lord's name, form, pastimes, and qualities of the Lord. Ajamil, however, did not glorify the form, qualities, or paraphernalia of the Lord, simply chanted the holy name. Nevertheless, that chanting was sufficient to cleanse him of all sinful activities. Soon as the Vishnu Dutas heard their master's name being chanted, they immediately came. In this regard, Srila Vijaya Dvajatirtha remarks, Anena putra sneham antarena prachindashcha prachindar, excuse me, prachindar drishta bhala utbhutaya bhaktya bhagavanam sankirtanam kittam iti yayate. Ajamil chanted the name of Narayan because of his excessive attachment to his son. Nevertheless, because of his past good fortune and having rendered devotional service to Narayan, he apparently chanted the holy name in full devotional service and without offenses.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Vaidya Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinoda.
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Didn't expect to see so many people in class this morning. This is a party.
How do you welcome?
Nice to see you. Usually when I come, maybe you get 10, 15. Thank you for coming. Sorry I wasn't here on Wednesday. I was detained in New York. Unexpectedly and beyond my control. Nonetheless, I think it was announced that I'll be able to be at all the rest of the scheduled programs unless unexpectedly beyond my control happens again. But I'm not planning that. So, who is speaking here? Connected to the text? I think it's the Vishnu Dutas. No, it's pretty good because it's speaking about the Vishnu Dutas. Must be Shivadeva Goswami. Okay, So, important verse, such as this whole section of the Bhagavatam, of course, such as the whole message of Srimad Bhagavatam, but this section is also very relevant and very important. Especially this verse highlights the reason why Vishnudut disappeared before the dying Ajamila. From all external calculations, it should seem that their presence wasn't required. Everything was taken care of. From all external calculations, the Yamadutas were sufficient and to deal which was appear to them to be what they always do. And nobody ever stopped them before, so why? For doing what they always do and what they're justified to do, what they're instructed to do, and what they are doing in full knowledge, what they thought to do. In other words, they have scriptural backing, they have the backing of Yamaraj, and from all external perceptions to them, this was a clear-cut case of a visit from the Yamadutas only, and required. And why? Because it appears that there was no atonement for the sins committed by Ajamila. And in fact, later, when there will be a discussion between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, which we'll jump ahead a little bit too, because it's directly connected to this verse, they'll be specifically discussing this point that there's no atonement. We didn't see anything. Nothing. No indications whatsoever prior to this one event. The one event is that he's about to die. Prior to this one event, and we look at the list, years of sins. We look at the list of the sins committed, and there's no break. There's no apparent any effort whatsoever performed by this Ajamila to atone for those sins. Clear-cut case. Slam dunk is this thing. This person's got to be punished. And, sorry, throwing in a basketball term, I was reminded of it when I saw the stripes on the floor this morning. That's what I had to remove. Anyways. Forgive me, I don't know who I offended by removing those stripes, but the first thing I thought was, this is a temple room, not a basketball court. just looking for the key. anyways, from all calculations, it looked like a clear-cut case of punishment. And there was nobody better to take care of that than the Yamadutas. That's their job. And they're very devoted to it, and they're very devoted to their master, who's given them all clear instruction, the criteria for those who should be punished. But in that dialogue, which we'll allude to, or not allude to, we'll actually speak from, in the future, in the next chapter, they're going to speak about atonement and what is, because it looks to them, the Yamadutas, it looked to them that there was no atonement, and the Vishnudutas are going to say, sorry, there was a Torah. And we're here to represent the person who makes the final decisions on these things. And clearly, if there's atonement, then why would you want to punish somebody who's already atoned? It seems to be... to do so would indicate that the master you're serving likes to see people punished. And why should you misrepresent your master? He doesn't like to see people punished. He doesn't derive any pleasure from it. And because there could be no other reason for it. Because he doesn't, this Ajahn doesn't need to be punished. Atonement's already been completed. And from an external point of view, it might seem remarkable that, well, he didn't even chant with full devotion. So, what was the actual, what was the reason, justification, to say that he's atoned and doesn't deserve to be punished? So, here it says, which sounds pretty good, of course, if we just read this verse in and of itself, it says, he certainly chanted without offense. Why? Because he chanted in complete anxiety. Well, it sounds wow. I can do that. Show me those evil faces, time of death, and I'm going to be in anxiety too. Is that the qualification to eradicate all offenses? Just to be in complete anxiety? To be in complete anxiety, generally somebody who's in complete anxiety, they're going to think how to get freed from this event which is about to happen. This looks serious. These people have come with paraphernalia to do something which appears to be suffering. And not just looking at the paraphernalia is one thing, but when I look at their faces, they don't look like they're going to bless me. So there's a cause for anxiety. So it's not just that he chanted in complete anxiety that there was no offense. And in the next chapter, when discussing this particular point, Vishnudunas explain why, the reason why. They say that Acharya has already atoned for all his sinful actions. Indeed, he has atoned not only for sins performed in one life, but for those performed in millions of lives. For in a helpless condition, he chanted the holy names of Narayan. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense, and therefore he is now pure and eligible for liberation. So then Prabhupada goes on to explain in this commentary pretty much what I've already explained, so I won't read it again. But in the next verse, the Vishnudutas say, Vishnudutas continue, even previously, while eating and other times, this Ajahn Bhil would call his son, saying, "My dear Narayan, please come here." Although calling the names of his son, he nevertheless uttered the four syllables Narayana. Simply by chanting the name of Narayana in this way, he sufficiently atoned for the sinful reactions of millions of lives. Purport. Previously, when engaged in sinful activities to maintain his family, Ajahn Bhil chanted the name of Narayana without offenses. To chant the holy name of the Lord just to counteract one's sinful activities, just, or to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name is offensive. Namo balad yasya hi papa bhuti. But although Ajamil engaged in sinful activities, he never chanted the holy name of Narayan to counteract them. He simply chanted the name Narayan to call his son. In other words, you know, someone may say, well, he seems like he wasn't very conversant on offenses to the holy name of the Lord. If he was conversant on the offenses of the holy name of the Lord, he might have calculated. He might have calculated. I know how to get out of this. Narayan! It could have been very calculated. Like, look, I've heard before that one who chants the name of God, that even if, as long as he's wearing these Kanti mala, the Vishnu, the Yamadutas will, they'll just come and they'll offer obeisances. Of course, maybe probably didn't have any Kanti mala, huh? But I've heard that even if they simply see the Kanti mala, they'll come and they'll offer obeisances. What to speak of if I say, Narayan, stop, I'm clean. Don't punish me. He wasn't calculated. He wasn't calculated. That's the point. What was his reason? He was just so much in total anxiety that he didn't calculate anything. He just called out, Narayan, without offense. Because he wasn't thinking of counteracting the sins he had committed. He knew, it's like we said, we knew it was a dangerous situation. It was clear. That's why he was afraid. He was in anxiety. So here the point is being made that, but although Ajamil engaged in sinful activities, he never chanted the holy name of Narayan to counteract them. Not only at the time of death, but even prior, when he was calling out his son, Narayan, he was never, and this point is going to be brought out, I'll bring this out, because it's a very wonderful commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is not included here within the text of these commentaries. But he makes it very clear in the commentary that that even he called out at the time of his death, yes, that's prepared him and made him sinless, but he was already breaking the ground and preparing it, even throughout his sinful life, because he was always calling out his son, Narayan, because he was so attached to him. So he was already preparing it for this, even before, because even while he was doing that, he wasn't calling out the name of Narayan in an offensive way. He was just calling his son. But we'll talk about that in a little while. But let's finish the commentary. But although Ajamil engaged in sinful activities, he never chanted the holy name Narayan to counteract them. He simply chanted the name Narayan to call his son. Therefore, his chanting was effective. Because of chanting the holy name of Narayan in this way, he had already vanquished the accumulated sinful reactions of many, many lives. In the beginning, he was pure. The beginning means before he fell down to prostitute. In the beginning, he was pure, but although he later committed many sinful acts, he was offenseless because he did not chant the holy name of Narayan to counteract them. One who always chants the holy name of the Lord without offenses is always pure. As confirmed in this verse, Ajamil was already sinless. Because he chanted the name of Narayan, he remained sinless. It did not matter that he was calling his son. The name itself was effective. That's Prabhupada's commentary, which kind of incorporates what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also mentions in connection to this verse and the next verse. But he's also going to bring up the point that Ajamil was already sinless because he was chanting without offenses whenever he called out this name. And he says it did not matter that he was calling his son, the name itself was affected. Now let me go to the commentaries in these verses, and which are elaborations. The first verse we read, this person has performed atonement for the sins of 10 million births since he has spontaneously chanted the auspicious name of the Lord. So, actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does this a lot. I forget there's a Sanskrit name for it. He creates dialogue. And that is not there in the Bhagavatam, but it's simply an elaboration on the actual verses itself. Oftentimes I quote that dialogue and that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does between Durvasa Muni and Lord Vishnu. There's a dialogue there between the two of them, which is not actually in the text of the Bhagavatam, but his dialogue is simply an elaboration on actually what's transpired in that exchange between the Lord and Durvasa. In the same way, his dialogue that he now creates here is an elaboration of what's transpiring in this particular connection. So the dialogue is between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas. Is the Yamadutas is saying, you castigate us, but what offenses have we and our master committed in taking away Ajamil to purify him, since he has performed no atonements for over 1,000 great sins? Nothing on our records. Right? Nothing on our records. So, he has certainly performed atonement, and this is response. He has certainly performed atonement, not only for the sins of one life, but for 10,000 lives. Sins, yes. He has chanted the name of the Lord, even though it was done unconsciously. The Smritis say, Namno hi yavati sakti papaniharane hare tavat kartum na saknuti patakam pataki nara. A sinful man cannot commit as many sins as can be destroyed by the power of the Lord's name. Vishnu Purana. Excuse me, I forgot to put my phone on. I thought it didn't work in the temple, that's why. Well, anybody else have an experience? Yeah. Fungal pulse never work in the temple?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
How do I put it on? Do not disturb, okay. Maybe that works. Then another quote from Vishnu Purana. A human is freed from all sins when he chants the Lord's name even unconsciously. The sins flee like animals frightened of a lion, even unconsciously. Not only, and this, Vishnu Dutas continue, not only does chanting the Lord's name cause atonement, but it's the cause of liberation. And this is another verse from the Skanda Purana. Whoever chants two syllables Hari only once is fit for attaining liberation. Okay, those are his commentaries for the first verse. And the second verse, Vishnu Dutas is saying, when he chanted the four syllables Narayana, atonement for the sins he committed has been accomplished. And then in the commentary, again, the Yamadutas is saying, but Ajamil did not chant with awareness that this was atonement. He called out for his son because he was afraid of us. That's it. He didn't do it for atonement. Why are you giving him credit when credit's not due? He didn't do it for atonement. He was calling his son. And then Vishnu Dutas responded, you do not understand the truth. Being materialistic, you do not understand. Even by calling for his son while not seeking to make atonement of this sinner was accomplished. Agavat is here conjugated like Magavan. Just chanting at this time for his son is the atonement for all his sins. However, previously he chanted in ungrammatical language. Oh, Narayan, come here from your mother's lap to my lap. The atonement took place then. Not only chanting four syllables, but chanting the Lord's name in two syllables or in one syllable also destroys all sins, such as Hari. This is, of course, it's explained also in Harinam Chintamani, Namabhas. Even if one chants the name of Hari, even if one chants unknowingly, either out of mockery, if someone chants Krishna's name, still he performs Namabhas, and Namabhas is the conversation between Haridas Thakur and who was it? Gopala Chakravarti. He makes it very clear that even once chanting the Namabhas, he quotes that verse that just as the rising sun immediately dissipates all the darkness, in the same way, even though although the sun is not fully manifested in the sky, as soon as it arises, immediately all the ghosts and hobgoblins and everything else, they disappear. And this verse was given as an explanation that simply by a slight glimpse, even before the full name is fully manifest, even a slight glimpse of the name, which is Namabhas, can immediately free one from all fear because it sends all the reactions of sinful life away. Problem is, what happens after that? One can commit sin again. And that's what, of course, the whole story of Ajamila is about, is that real atonement is not just eradicating the sinful reactions. Real atonement means to purify the propensity to commit sin in the first place, or to give up. That's real, complete atonement. Right. Most complete. And therefore that conversation between Shukadeva Goswami and Pariksit Maharaj was meant to lead to that conclusion that no, simply atoning for one's sinful activities, like persons who oftentimes Prabhupada even speaks about in the commentary of one verse, in that verse, he talks about the professional sinners. The professional sinners, he gives the example of those who go to church and confess for their sins. And they confess for their sins, and then they think, okay, I'm clean. Take care of that one. Now that I've taken care of that one, I've cleared the slate, and I can start fresh. And then I'll go next week too. So Prabhupada specifically uses that term, the professional sinner. It's like, but what's the value if the propensity to commit sins hasn't been eradicated? Which led to the verse actually we spoke about last night in another program, where that in a rare person who engages in devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, he can uproot these weeds of simple actions without any possibility of them ever reviving. He does this simply by engaging in devotional service, just as the sun dissipates fog by its rays, which is, of course, the conclusive evidence of this particular pastime. And this particular story of the glories of the holy name of the Lord. That the effects of chanting without offense can eradicate one from sinful life. And which is what happened to Ajamil, because he chanted without offense. And then it's going to go on to explain something else here in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's next verse. In the commentary, which is really, really, what it really does, it establishes so much the true glory of the name, and for a very important reason, that one of the offenses to the holy name of the Lord is to minimize the glories of the holy name of the Lord. That's an offense. To minimize. So, therefore, this pastime is being brought to light to increase one's awareness and appreciation of the glories of the Holy Name of the Lord, so that one will not make the mistake of minimizing the glories of the Lord. And Haridas Thakur, in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in Harinam Chintamani, he specifically makes that point, that one of the offenses of the Holy Name of the Lord is to think that these verses, how is it possible that millions of sins can be, that's far out. You know, how can you believe something like that? Right? If one's not careful, one may, in the back of their mind, they may think that way. That's really far out. How can I accept that? It's an offense. It's an offense. You better accept it. If you don't, you're committing an offense. And if you commit an offense, then when you chant Narayana, the fences will still be there because you're thinking, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I'm going to try it anyways. I might as well keep all bases covered. But I know that it's pretty far-fetched to think that I can just like, that's an offense. So one of the, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is actually going to bring to light not only that this is one of the reasons why this pastime is being spoken about and emphasized, but it's going to bring to light how dear to that the person becomes to the Lord. That the Lord personally has to intervene. Because without the Lord's intervention, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. He's right. But there's that verse we oftentimes quote. What is it? Balasya. No, that's not it. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's nothing for him to do because everything is done automatically by his multifarious energies. I always quote that verse, but somehow the Sanskrit's escaping me at this moment. But his devotees are already taking care of everything. He doesn't have to get involved. Maya Devi, she takes care of everything. The demigods are taking care of everything. Yamaraj, taking care of everything. They're already acting. Like, why would Vishnu have to intervene? Why would he have to get involved? They're all taking care of him. But the point that's highlighted is Vishnu, or the Lord, intervenes. Catches his attention. And that's what's going to be brought out in the next. It's a very long commentary. And because I know tomorrow, I'm supposed to give the class tomorrow. And it's a continuation of this topic. I'm not going to complete the whole thing today. Because if I do, I won't leave time for class. What time is it? It used to be a class.
9:10.
Okay. But I'll start it. And hopefully those who want to hear more about it will come tomorrow morning. Because there's a lot more. But, because what is the next verse? Next verse is pretty. It's not the next verse from where we're reading, it's the next verse from where I'm reading in the second chapter. That the verse, next verse is the chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement. It's a very well known verse. You know this one, right?
It sounds a little like some people I know.
People you know?
Yeah.
Oh, what this verse is about. You know a lot of these people like this. Do you ever tell them a story about you?
Yeah.
What do they say?
Oh, I can't remember.
The chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief, for a drunkard, for one who betrayed. Keep your, if any of you need to make a list of these. for one who betrays a friend or a relative, for one who kills a Brahmin, for one who indulges in sex with the wife of his guru or another superior, for one who kills women, the king, his father, or cows, and for all other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. Here it is. This is the attract the attention. Right? It's going to come. But there's no offenses. It's going to come. What is it that attracts his attention? Okay. So, as I said, this is a very long commentary here. I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to start it. I'm going to start the part about attracts attention. The name of the Lord may destroy sins, but how can Namabhas, which we talked about before, Namabhas, this glimpse of the Holy Name, be the atonement for thousands of grave sins? In fact, that's what the whole conversation between Gopal Chakravarti and Haridas Thakur was about. That Gopal Chakravarti was like flabbergasted. It's when he heard that the chanting of the names of the Lord can eradicate, can give one liberation. He said, how's it possible liberation can't even be achieved from millions of births? And you're trying to tell me? He was like, and then Haridas Thakur had to tell him, he said, look, if Namabhas doesn't give one liberation, I'll cut off. I mean, no. What was it? He said, I'll cut off, no. Gopal Chakravarti said, I'll cut off your nose. And Haridas Thakur said, but if it doesn't give liberation, I'll cut off my own nose. And then he goes on to explain in that conversation about the power of Namabhas. So the name of the Lord may destroy sins, but how can Namabhas be the atonement for thousands of grave sins which cannot be destroyed by thousands of 12-year vows? Stena means a gold thief. Chanting is the best atonement, suniskritam, since it destroys the root of sin. A 12-year vow of atonement, though it destroys the effects of sin, cannot destroy the root of sin. That is not the only result, because from chanting the name of the Lord's mind dwells on that person who chants, tad vishaya mati. The Lord thinks, quote, this person belongs to me. I will always protect him. This is Sridhar Swami's meaning of the phrase. So, this is what he's saying. He's thinking that he belongs to me. I'm going to intervene. Right? Sometimes we quote that verse. What is it? Daivi Shivuna Mayinam Maya Duratiya Mami Deva Pajati Layanita Pravatite. Right? Where Krishna says the divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. But one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. So, in the same way, right? When a living entity actually surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna actually says to Maya, he belongs to me. He surrenders. Give him up. You don't have to. No more. No, your involvement, participation, no longer required. He surrendered to me. Leave him alone. He's mine. In the same way, here, person... Sridhar Swami says, this person belongs to me. Then he goes on to explain, hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamil, the Lord ordered us to bring Ajamil, who was chanting his name, Vishnu. Hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamil, the Lord ordered us to bring Ajamil, who was chanting his name. Then how much more, and this is the important point, then how much more the Lord will remember a person who chants the Lord's name with a service attitude. This is actually a very, very essential point that's going to be brought to light. There'll be more explanation. If even if a person chants like this, like Ajamil did, he clears himself from sinful reactions and the Lord gets the Lord's attention. Just imagine how much more attentive the Lord will be for those who chant in service. And we oftentimes quote, and I think in this connection I'm going to read it because I wasn't planning on it, but it just came to mind. It's perfect. We quote, if I can find it, forgive me. changed my reader recently. It's here. I'm fine. To read this quote and I'll find it if it kills me. We were saying, it's a long time since I said it, should go back. We were saying that what to speak of a person if the holy name, if the Lord will take notice of somebody who chants like Ajahn Mill did, what is to speak of a person who chants with a service attitude? And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that, quote, to answer to the question, how should we chant the Lord's holy names? And he says that pure devotees do not chant the Lord's names to counteract sinful reactions, to accumulate piety, to attain heavenly pleasures, to mitigate famine, devastating epidemics, social unrest, disease, civil strife, or to obtain wealth or an earthly kingdom. Since the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to ask Him to fulfill our wishes is to treat Him as our servant. This is an offense. Therefore, calling the Lord's names for any reason other than to attain His devotional service is useless. Jesus Christ told us not to take the Lord's name in vain. However, this does not mean we do not need to always chant the Lord's names while sleeping, awake, eating, or enjoying happiness. To chant the Lord's name, begging for His service, is not a useless activity. It is our only duty. But to make a show of chanting for some other purpose, in other words, to fulfill our own desires, is useless. We should not take to the chanting of the Lord's names uselessly. We should not chant to attain religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. Instead, we should always chant to attain the Lord's service. Okay, so we might hear this and think, wait a minute, useless? How is this useless? We just had our whole class. Of how it's not useless. So what is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explaining here? And this connection, I oftentimes quote a verse, because I quote this a lot, it's a verse spoken by Devi Huti. She says that anyone whose work does not elevate him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise one to this platform of renunciation, and anyone who is situated in renunciation that doesn't lead to devotional service to Krishna is considered to be a dead body, although breathing. So in that verse, what she's actually saying is that for all intents and purposes, devotional service, pure devotional service, if it doesn't lead to pure devotional service, It's a waste of time. Dharmas finish the tapung samadhishak saying, what is the body of yadita ting shamaya yadita kevala? Whatever occupational duties a person performs, if it doesn't awaken a distraction for hearing a chanting about Krishna, shamaya yadita kevala. Waste of time. Useless. Useless. So its uselessness is, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is explaining right here, it's useless for those who are eager to achieve pure devotional service. For those who understand or have awakened faith in pure devotional service, simply are having awakened their faith in pure devotional service, for them, it's useless. It's useless. Because it's having awakened their faith in pure devotional service, it's with offense. If you do it to counteract sinful activities, if you do it to, as all the things he gives here, to counteract sinful reactions, to accumulate piety, elevation to heavenly planets, to mitigate famine, to obtain wealth, earthly kingdom, that's an offense. So, important ingredient is having awakened faith in pure devotional service. So, once one has awakened his faith in pure devotional service, if he does it for any other reason than for not to achieve service, it's offensive. And the same result won't be there. And why do we chant the 10 offenses every morning? Well, at least we should remember the 10 offenses. Because actually, if one wants to get the ultimate result of chanting, he has to become free from offenses. As long as offenses are committed, one may eradicate sinful reactions to life, but if he hasn't awakened that desire, spontaneous desire to always engage in the service of the Lord, the tendency to commit sins will always remain there in the heart. And therefore, even though one may free one from the reactions of sinful life, one may once again have to get the reactions of sinful life. So the best method of atonement is to awaken the desire, to awaken faith in pure holy name of the Lord. Best method. To awaken faith and hearing the pastimes of the Lord. In Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, he specifically states this, that a person who has awakened faith and hearing the narrations of my glories, he's disgusted with sense gratification, knowing that all sense gratification leads to suffering, but he still can't give it up. Right? And Krishna says to Uddhava, he should remain happy and faithfully go on hearing those narrations. Because even though he knows these sense gratification leads to suffering, he can't give them up. He sincerely repents for such engagements. Why? Because he knows. He's awakened faith. And whenever he does it, when he sincerely repents, by that sincere repentance, he further purifies himself through his sincere repentance so that he will no longer engage in those activities again. He has faith that only pure devotional service can eradicate all the reactions of sinful life without any possibility of reviving. Therefore, what does he do? He goes on hearing and chanting with faith. That's it. That's the solution. That is the solution. Faith, and to go on hearing and chanting with that faith. He goes on hearing and chanting with that faith. Then that will protect him from committing offenses. He'll think that, yes, in fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to the verse I just quoted, he even says, I'm ready to suffer millions of births, sins, for my sinful activities. Even if I can't give it up, I'm ready to suffer. But I will never give up. Never give up service to Krishna. I'll never give up hearing and chanting the glories of pure devotional service. even if I have to suffer billions of births. That kind of determination is faith. Faith. And one who has that faith, then Krishna really says, oh, just see how much faith he has in my name. How can I neglect him? Like Mukunda. He was told he had to wait 10 million births to see him again. But he had so much faith in the words of Lord Chaitanya. He said, I will see, I will see. 10 million births was irrelevant. So immediately the Lord canceled 10 million births and said, tell Mukunda, I want to see him now. That is how the Lord, faith in pure devotional service, faith in the power of hearing and chanting the glories of the name of the Lord. Okay. There's more, as we said, to the commentary. But any questions? They may become freed from sins, but in the next moment they can accumulate millions of sins again, except for reactions again. That's the whole point. That simply to eradicate sinful reactions to life is not a solution to sinful activities, because the tendency to commit sins is still it's a vicious circle. So okay, maybe 3 weeks ago they may have said in jest a name, and they may out of jest eradicated some sinful reactions. But what have they done since then? You know, there it's very cumulative, and again, but that's we're talking about chanting Krishna's name. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chaitanya explains the different types of, I can't remember the Sanskrit terminology, but the different types of chanting in jest or chanting and not in jest, but even in, what's the other word he uses? I can't remember. So the different circumstances which one may chant the name Rama, like Bolarama. Right, it's like Bolarama. Oh, let's go to the Bolarama tomorrow. The Bolarama. Thinking of a bowling alley. And the saying Rama. So, yes, there may be some effect of that. But to say that it can eradicate the sins of millions of births by that one chanting. There is some effect there, but it doesn't immediately eradicate everything. And also, the cumulative continuation of sins, which they perform, doesn't go away. And that's the most important point, is not how to get freed from the sins, because as long as the propensity to commit sinful activity is still there, that's sinful. And there'll be reactions for it. So that's why. That's why. Yes, it's a circle.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the children, the holy name is without offense, and the pure thoughts and intention to serve the Lord. That is understandable. But what if someone would like to pray and devote this prayer to their close family or to seek person, to the person who's in is a trouble right now? Would you consider it as the offensive prayer to the Lord when you pray for somebody, not for yourself? You are not bringing out of this prayer anything.
Depends what you're praying for them, right? Prabhupada, our spiritual master, when he was in a very precarious situation, his health was bad, he asked us to pray for him too. He asked us to have kirtan for him. But he asked us to pray, "Oh, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please let Srila Prabhupada stay with us." So Prabhupada was always surrendered to Krishna's final decision and never imposed on Krishna a particular condition that needed to be fulfilled. So if we pray for somebody, please protect them, always protect them, and chant in that way, then that's not offensive. But if we put a condition on what Krishna has to do,
okay.
That's offensive. That's making Krishna our servant or making Krishna their servant. Which is just as bad.
So for instance, if you're praying for somebody and that person has really that karma or that karmic reactions and knows something is going to happen, it's inevitable, but you can pray probably for Krishna for his mercy to still
be merciful. Help this person remember you under all circumstances.
Okay.
Help this person remember you under all circumstances, please. Whether in life or in death, whether in difficulty, whether in happiness or distress.
But do not ask to negate whatever the...
Whatever, that's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't make Krishna a servant. I'm going to answer the rest of the questions tomorrow, because I have things I have to do this morning. I'm going to end here.
Hare Krishna.